This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What's up, guys? Welcome to News Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Solomon Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker, at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. I was sick last week, but I'm not sick this week, but I still sound kind of sick. How's it going?
That's progress, though. You know, you're not feeling sick.
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's something. Something to work with. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, always got to look at the comparative improvement.
Right. Always. Always got to look at that. So let's go with some news first. There hasn't really been much with the Rockets this week. I guess we can talk about the lineup change. So the Rockets changed their lineup before tonight's game to move Eric Gordon to the starting small forward position and move Daniel House to the bench. Thoughts?
So what? It's basically to kickstart Eric Gordon, presumably, right?
Yeah.
See if his confidence will return or something will return. I don't know that anything returned.
It didn't seem to work the first game. So I don't really have a strong feeling. Like, I don't really care who the Rockets start. Like, to me, that's unimportant. Like, to me, it really matters how many minutes each guy is playing and who closes and, like, what are their best lineups for, like, to go with in general. Like, it doesn't really matter to me if they start Eric Gordon or if they don't. As long as they're not starting, like, I don't know, Isaiah Hartenstein. Like, it really doesn't matter who the Rockets start. As long as that player is in the Rockets' core 6 to 7 man rotation.
Well, they could start Isaiah Hartenstein in the G League.
They could do that. That might be a good idea. That might be a good idea there. Over here, I'm not sure if it's a good idea. Not, you know, they haven't tried it yet. So who's to say? You know, who's to say? But yeah, like, to me, like, it's really insignificant who starts and who doesn't. Like, as long as, like, that is a core player that's starting, and to me, it seems like this move, as you said, was made to jumpstart Eric Gordon, who has struggled, to say the least. He has been really, really bad on both ends of the floor. Not just shooting. A lot of people are paying attention to shooting. His defense has not been good. Just letting guys drive right by him off the ball hasn't been great. Not the Eric Gordon of last season, not even the Eric Gordon of like 2 seasons ago, has not been good. And I think this is a mental thing. Like, I think this is something Mike D'Antoni did to, you know, kind of show that he has confidence in Eric. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people complain about, you know, like, Eric playing bad. Why don't you bench him? Like, no, that is not what you do. Like, when one of your most important players is playing really badly, like, and seems to have a confidence issue, you don't exacerbate that and put him to the bench and, like, suddenly play him 20 minutes a game. You can't do that. With players, you have to be delicate in how you manage their egos, how you manage their confidence levels, and I don't think playing Eric Gordon less is the solution here. I probably would have stuck to the same starting lineup. Again, it doesn't really matter, but I like the look of Daniel House starting a little bit more. But putting Eric Gordon in the starting lineup is better than playing him less than what you were before.
Yeah, I think that's true. He has to get through it because, like you said, this is one of the core players. This isn't like a, like, if it was, for example, like Thabo Sefolosha or somebody going through this, then you can go. We'll just won't play him until he's playing okay. But you can't with Eric Gordon. He's too big of a player in the team, and they have to get his head on straight. And to do that, like you said, you can't not play them. That's exactly the opposite to tell them for sure you have no confidence in him. So I don't, you know, there's not a good solution when this is happening. I think people would like an easy fix, but there really, this isn't going to be one.
Benching him is a short-term solution. Sure, it may be better to win one or two games here and there, but the Rockets don't care about one or two games here and there. They're trying to win a championship. If they have to depend on winning one or two games here and there, like they're screwed. They're absolutely screwed. Now, as far as whether or not it worked, we're one game in. It's who's to say? It was really, really rough tonight. Now, let me say it was really, really rough tonight. I have a feeling Mike D'Antoni will continue to start Eric Gordon for the foreseeable future. And I think it doesn't really matter in regards to Daniel House. He's going to be playing a lot of minutes. I know a lot of Rockets fans kind of panic in regards to Daniel House, but I promise you, like, the Rockets are really, really high on Daniel House. Like, I can tell you that right now. They do not intend on playing Daniel House less minutes. Like, that's not in their plans.
How could they, too? He's been obviously very good so far this season.
Yeah, like, coaches aren't stupid. I think, like, a lot of fans kind of just assume that when a player moves to the bench, like, that is a sign that, you know, that coach trusts the player that they're moving into the starting lineup more. That's not true. Like, in this case especially, it's not true. I think it's just a case of trying to kickstart Eric Gordon. I don't, you know, like, Mike D'Antoni talked about some stuff defensively, like, maybe you can put Eric Gordon on the guy who defends the ball, and maybe that helps solve their defensive issues. I think that's ancillary. I don't think Mike D'Antoni was thinking about that when he made this rotation change. I think he was thinking purely, let's get Eric Gordon going. And that's all there is to it to me. Like, I don't think this is really that significant in regards to the Rockets long term. Like, even in the playoffs, if they choose to start Eric Gordon, I don't think it really matters, because I think Daniel House is going to be part of their core seven. It really doesn't matter who they start and who they don't. So, other news, Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein have been moved to the G League. I guess this is somewhat significant in that it's very clear that Gary Clark is not good.
Some people are going to be very mad at you for saying that.
It's fine. I listen to me. Gary Clark at Summer League should have dominated. He really should have. Like, that was his stage. He was 3 years in, and at Summer League, like, I went into Summer League expecting Gary Clark to be one of the best players there. I really did, because he was older than everybody there. He had more NBA experience than everybody there, and he did not show up. Like, he showed up like he was too good to be there. Like, I have real questions at this point about Gary Clark's motor. I have real questions about Gary Clark and, like, his future in the NBA. Like, you know, like, he played well in that stretch last season. A lot of fans look at that and think that's what Gary Clark is. And it's possible the Rockets didn't have much options, and he happened to be hot at the time. And he started missing shots, started messing up defensively, and he fell out of the rotation. And Daniel House, frankly, outplayed him for that rotation spot. And I don't think he's the answer for anything the Rockets do this season. And if he is the answer, like, I'm sorry, they're in a lot of trouble. I think I have no problem with the Rockets assigning Gary Clark to the G League. I really don't. Like, in my opinion, Chris Clemens and Daniel House are better than him. Like, I have no problem with him going to the G League. Isaiah Hartenstein, this is a guy I was high on early into the season. I think I have to reconcile and say, like, he's probably not very good either. if NBA coaches, like, and these are a lot of coaches making these decisions. It's not just Mike. Like, there are a ton of coaches in these meetings. Like, they come up with these decisions together. If they're all saying Isaiah's not good, he's probably not good. If he's not good enough to be in the rotation, in their opinion, he's probably not good enough to be in the rotation. Like, and if you really think about it, like, you know, he's not really a good lob catcher. He's pretty good on the offensive glass. He hustles like crazy, and that's kind of what drew me to him. Other than that, like, as an NBA rotation player defensively, I'm not really sold. Like, I guess he's just not good. Like, I guess both Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein just aren't NBA players. Like, they probably at this point belong in the G League. And it really feels like after these two got their contracts last season, like, especially Gary Clark, like, after Gary Clark got his contract last season, like, they probably got fat and happy. Like, there is something to the case that, hey, like, if everybody says he's not good, like, if all these professional talent assessors say he's not good enough to be in the NBA, he's probably not good enough to be in the NBA. Like, I really think it can be that simple. It really can.
Well, this strikes me as a kind of a last chance situation for Gary Clark and Hartenstein. These are both two guys who, as we said, have shown a lot of promise.
A lot of strong. Some promise.
Yeah, I mean, they have potential. They've shown that they, like have spurts where they can do something worthwhile, but they have to prove that they can improve and do things consistently. So, yeah, they really need to go down there and just kind of kick a lot of ass in the G League. That's probably their best plan, whether they know it or not.
And if they don't, like, I don't know how it could be more clear. Like, really, like, I thought Summer League was a big indictment on these two. Like, these guys really should have. And Isaiah was playing good towards the end, to be fair, and he got hurt, right when he started to get rolling. So I can't really put too much blame on Isaiah, but Gary Clark specifically, this is a guy who should have dominated in that setting. And I get his strength is on the defensive end, but even on defense, I didn't think he was particularly strong in the Summer League. And I talked to scouts about this. They felt the same way. A lot of people felt the same way. A lot of people thought Gary Clark should have went into the Summer League and killed it. Like, the rotation spots were there for them. They really were. Going into the season, the Rockets didn't have dependable wings and a good backup center at the time of Summer League. So there was motivation there.
If you better believe that if Gary Clark was really showing out, that he would absolutely find some minutes in this current Rockets team too.
Right.
So.
Like, it's not just showing off, like showing out on the court. The practices count too. And, yeah. And if these guys are showing out in practice, I promise you, they'll see the floor. They will. While it is true that sometimes a lot of coaching staffs misjudge talents and, you know, they bounce around the league and they find a spot and they blow up, I don't think that's the case here. I really don't. I think these guys probably just aren't good enough to be in the NBA. And that hurts me as an Isaiah stan. Like, I liked Isaiah. I liked Isaiah a lot.
And I like Gary Clark a lot. If he could do the things he's supposed to be doing, he would be a good backup for PJ Tucker in particular, right? They need a guy like that. They really need a guy who can do what Gary Clark looked like he could do, but he doesn't look like he can do that.
Right, and that's another thing. Like, I'm glad you brought that up. Like, this is a team that could use extra bodies. Like, they're paper thin. So if Gary Clark was as good as people think he is, he'd be finding his way into the rotation just out of desperation. Just out of desperation. And he's not. And that's an indictment on him.
I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in the G League.
Sure. Yeah. We spent probably too much time on that news item. So let's talk about the games this week. Yeah, we can probably skip over the Oklahoma City game and the New Orleans game. Let's talk about the Washington game. Because this game was just bat crazy. This just from the start, it just like it was who makes the last shot wins the game. Like that was essentially what it was. Like there was no stoppage on defense. it was a complete like, and a lot of the shots that both of these two teams were hitting were contested shots. Like a lot of these shots that Bradley Beal was hitting and Davis Bertan was hitting and James Harden was hitting. These guys were hitting contested. Like step back jumpers, and they were just—they were all going in. Like it was a night where both teams seemingly could not miss. It's gonna go down in NBA history as like the third most points scored in regulation.
It is wild how close the game was, especially given the like both teams hit everything, but the Wizards were hitting everything like at another level above where the Rockets were too. Like if you look at a team, you say, oh, 53% overall from the field, 43% from three-pointer, that's really damn good. That's like a hot shooting night. Certainly they won that game, and they did, but their opponent shot 63% from the field and 56% from three. Wow.
That's like an insane Steph night. Like that's what that is.
And it's the whole team.
It was a ridiculous game. It really was. And the ridiculousness kind of made you look past the very real defensive concerns that the Rockets showed. Right? Like I think that game was so fun that I think a lot of people kind of looked past, oh man, this is kind of a worrying sign that the Rockets had to score 159 points to beat the hopeless Washington Wizards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there are some bad augurs from that game.
And it was something that even I looked past because I looked at the shooting numbers in Wizards. I'm like, yeah, these guys are hitting ridiculous contested shots. Like, ridiculous contested shots. If you can go back and look at even, like, just go look at the highlights if you want. Like, you can find, like, Beal and Bertans in particular hitting some stupid, stupid contested jumpers. That's why it was easy to dismiss that kind of, you know, that kind of game. So we mentioned it earlier. This Rockets team is struggling to make shots. They made shots on that night. They made 40% of the threes, but in general, they have been absolutely putrid from the three-point, beyond three-point arc. They've been really, really bad.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. The game they played tonight, which I'm sure we will get into in greater agonizing detail, was both teams shot threes at the season average amount for Rockets this season, which is like right about at 30% for the Rockets and right at like 43% for the opposing team, which is, both of those are extremely troubling numbers.
They are 27th in the league in three-point percentage, 30.7%. Only the Orlando Magic, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Atlanta Hawks have shot worse from beyond the three-point line. That's terrible. That is absolutely terrible. And their opponents have just absolutely knocked it out of the park. Like, they have shot at a blistering rate.
Yeah, it's funny, this game tonight, too, they were still shooting at, like, 70% from three for the first half or something. It's just... At this point, it's almost like when the opponents see a Rockets jersey in front of them, it's easier than shooting in an open gym. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, I agree. It's rough. It is rough. Let's pay some bills here, Forrest. Ever seen untucked button-down? They look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button-down shirt actually designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, untucked shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. And with the holidays near, there's no better gift for your favorite guy who needs an upgrade. So I'm a big fan of untucked. Anybody who knows me knows, like, I'm not the biggest fan of dressing up. I walk around town with a t-shirt and shorts. Like, that's just my style. I don't like dressing up and getting all fancy. So untucked's like perfect for me, because when I go shopping for other shirts, like those shirts, when I leave them untucked, they'll come down to my knees often, and I'm just like, yeah, this isn't it. What are we doing here? Like, this isn't a gown. I'm here for a shirt. I'm here for a nice, good-looking shirt that I can wear with a nice pair of pants, and I can leave untucked. So I went ahead and I ordered untucked shirts, and they came in recently, and they fit great, they look great, and they look like they're meant to be untucked, which is just what I was looking for. Like, I don't like tucking my shirt, and untucked is perfect for me. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, untucked is the way to go. Visit untucked.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untucked.com, and that's promo code BLUE for 20% off. Following a team you love in 2019 can be time-consuming. Trying to follow everything that's happening in sports is almost impossible. Scrolling through every app and visiting every website on a daily basis is also impossible. That's why I subscribe to Axios Sports, the best free daily newsletter in the land. Axios Sports is a modern sports page delivered directly to your email inbox. When you sign up for free at sports.axios.com, you'll get the best stories from the NBA and NFL to cricket and ping pong and everything in between. Axios Sports also highlights the most important stats and trends, giving you the ability to stay informed. It's super simple to sign up, and it's free. Sports.axios.com. Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the friend sharing an amazing link with your buddies. Join the 100,000 sports fans who get caught up in the day before it even begins. And best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, nothing. This is free, curated sports content delivered directly to you. Sign up at sports.axios.com. Again, try it for free 99 at sports.axios.com. Rockets opponents are shooting 43.3% from three. That's worse than the NBA.
Yeah, it's never been that bad over a whole season for anyone ever.
It's not even close either. The Timberwolves are at 39.6. That's 4 percentage points difference from 30 to 29. That's ridiculous, man. Like, that's just horrible bad luck.
And this is the big debate, right? Like, it's, their defense is clearly bad.
Yeah.
And also they're also very clearly having bad breaks in opponent shooting. And like, one does not negate the other one, right? So like, the debate is like, oh, is this number real or not? I think it's kind of weird, because it's not gonna, like, look, it seems just as it's homery to say, oh, it's all just hot shooting, it'll even out and it'll be fine again. It seems like ludicrous in the opposite direction to say, nope, they're just the worst three-point defense team in the history of the NBA by a lot. That's just what it is. That's how bad they are. Like, it's pretty unlikely they are the worst three-point defense in all of history. That's an odd thing to go to immediately. So it will even out somewhat. How much is a very worrying question.
The Rockets have been allowing 43-pointers per game. And that's probably the biggest thing here, right? Because three-point attempts allowed is a pretty big indicator about how your defense is. And the Rockets are 28th right now. So they, you know, by all means, you're correct. Like, they are not as bad as they appear to be. They're still pretty bad right now. Their shot profile has shifted in such an opposite direction. Like, in the beginning of the week, you could say, okay, yeah, they're catching a lot of bad breaks. But now, it seems like they're giving up a lot of back cuts. Like, tonight, like, we'll talk about the Miami game in greater detail, because I feel like that's like a 10-minute discussion. But, like, the back cuts they allowed in that first quarter were just mind-numbing. Like, it was like, if you wanted to show someone in the NBA what bad defense was, you could just show this the tape for that first quarter against Miami. It was some of the worst defense I've ever seen in my life. It was
some
so
of
bad.
The worst a lot of things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was putrid. It was so bad. Like they were just giving up everything, and like transition buckets, second chance opportunities, back cuts, everything. Absolutely everything. They were giving it up in the first quarter. But we're going to talk about that later. But yeah, like so they have a lot to clean up defensively, but you're right. Once these numbers turn around, they're probably going to tick up a little bit defensively. At least a little bit. They're not going to be top 10. I think we've realized that pretty quickly.
No.
Like, they're probably going to still be bad, but not this bad.
Yeah, and their offense will improve also, obviously, as they like learn to shoot again. I mean, so I have some thoughts about this, about like the shooting and their general early season malaise, which they had last season as well. It kind of feels like they're playing into shape, which is at once both bad and understandable. Because the reality is that these guys are getting older. You know, your best players are in their 30s now. It gets harder to go as you get older, and it requires like more time and more daily maintenance to make sure that you are able to do what you used to be able to do easily. Look, I'm about to crack 40 pretty soon, and let me tell you, it is not as easy as it was when I was in my 20s. It is the case that it gets harder to do everything. So them playing their way into shape, I think, is a big part of this. Like, they're going to get more into game shape as it goes, but it's kind of a big indictment that they weren't already ready for this.
There's a possibility that the Japan trip had something to do with this. Like that's like we've seen with plenty of NBA teams, like that is something that readjustment of your clock, playing in a different time zone, coming back, and that kind of workload, like that takes a toll on your body. Like, and I'm sure even that has some sort of lingering effect onto how they're playing right now. Like they have not had a good 3-point shooting game that I'm at least off the top of my head, I can't remember even a game where they've shot average from the 3-point.
Well, other than that Wizards game.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Other than that Wizards game, I can't even remember a game where they shot average from 3-point line. Like they've been really bad.
The Asia trip slump is real. You know, and it, once again, it's not an excuse. Like, neither is their age.
We're just trying to figure it out.
Well, it just means they have a harder road, right? So they've just got to travel that harder road. Like, that's just all there is to it. It sucks that, like, it's more difficult for them than it was last year or whatever. Every year of your life, it sucks that they have this, like, weird jet lag problem that they're still probably having to shake off, compounded by getting older. But other teams have dealt with it, and they have to also.
And I say this right now, they're 500, and we're 6 games in, right? It's really tough to tell. And this is probably a good transition point. Like, it's really tough to tell early on whether or not it is a good time to flash the alarm, right? Like, here's a question for you. Do you think this is a correct time to panic if you're a Rockets fan?
Well, all right. So I have two answers to that question. I think that this, like every other time, is a fun time to panic, but I don't think... Like, I'll say this, I do not think the team should panic. Fans can do whatever they want. If you enjoy panicking, do so because of its own merits. But it's very early. I know that I often have a lot of doom and gloom, but I think that doom and gloom is always true. Even if things were looking better, I would still be wary of it, right? So there's a lot of time for us to turn around. If my biggest doom thing is that they're old is the biggest problem, which is a bad in as much as it means it'll just get worse over the years. But it's good in that it means that over this season it'll get better. So it is too early to have any like real concrete like worries or like any like massive panics, but you know, if you still want to panic, go for it, you know, have fun.
Yeah, and long time listeners of the podcast know how I feel about this kind of stuff. Like the 20 game mark is where I really start to make real concrete like judgment on a team. Like that I feel like is a pretty healthy time to judge like what we've seen so far. Like it's okay to make preliminary observations. That's what we're going to do every week until we get to the 20 game mark, right? Like we have no other choice. We have to start looking at what we see and making observations of it. But I feel like the 20 game mark is where you really start to understand a team. One positive, I guess, is that they have an offensive identity that they didn't have to start last season. Like last season they were bad on both ends. Like they flat out didn't have an identity, and this season at least they have that offensive identity down. And like the Russ and Harden stuff, like a lot of people worried about that going into the season. I don't think that's a real concern. Like I think they've gelled together pretty nicely on the offensive side of things. Other than the shooting, like they've been pretty fine. The defense is, and they're fourth in the NBA if, as a point of reference on the offensive side of things. On the defensive side of things,
where are they at there?
Yeah, it is worrisome. Like I think we used the flag analogy last podcast. Like we used, you know, green flag, yellow flag, red flag. So I'm not sure if I'm ready to say like they're at a red. Like I'm never going to say they're at a red flag kind of territory until the 20 game mark. But they're definitely at like dark yellow. Like is dark yellow a thing?
I think you mean orange.
Maybe.
Is it orange? Maybe.
Could be gold. Can we use like, gold
like...
here?
Like a golden rod, like a real, like a deep golden rod.
Yeah, we could use orangish slash gold, like something disgusting, like not yellow because you, we're in the middle of yellow and orange, so like whatever nasty color that is.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty too. That's fair. It is, man. It is hard to watch this team right now. Just to put that out there in terms of nastiness. Do you want to talk about this game? Do we dare?
Yeah, we have to kind of, right? Like it is the game of the week. If you noticed in our recap, like I absolutely tore them to shreds. This was one of the worst losses in Houston Rockets franchise history as far as regular season games is concerned. Like I don't even think that's a question. Like this was so bad. Especially that first quarter was,
God, that's the worst quarter I've ever seen. They looked I mean, some people have been saying, well, they're in Miami Saturday night during a...
That's not an excuse.
No, it's not. I mean, like, but they looked drunk. They looked like they were currently drinking before they stepped onto the court.
Yeah, not even hungover, just drunk, right?
Like, we're actively in the middle of drinking and, like, worked it off over the course of the game or something. That first quarter, they looked like they could barely stand up. I do not know what happened. Like, it's rare to see a team that bad. And for what it's worth, the Heat, as far as can be told, are a pretty good team. Like, that's a legitimately good team. And they're you know, yeah, they're
5-1
like,
right now. They're second in the East.
Yeah, so it's, you know, losing to a team on the caliber of the Heat is not in and of itself shameful necessarily, but losing in that like way this, is extremely shameful. That was rough. They gave up a 32-point deficit in one quarter. That's horrific. Just absolutely inexcusable. Whatever it is they did, they need to take a look in the mirror and not do whatever that was ever again.
I'm glad you said they looked asleep, because I could not have described it any other way. They looked like they had just woken up, and like it was like especially on defense. Like the Rockets, to their credit, have at least looked like adequate, like covering up these cuts, and they've been pretty okay on the defensive rebounding side of things, which was a major concern last season. Clint Capella in particular, like those first 5 minutes, if anybody had any question as to why Mike D'Antoni wasn't playing Clint Capela. Like, go watch those first 5 minutes.
God, he couldn't even catch a pass. He looked horrible.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like these guys were throwing bad passes. He literally could not catch anything. And that includes rebounds. He could not catch rebounds. He looked awful. And he picked it up to his credit in the third and fourth quarter. But in general, he just like there was just a malaise about him and a slowness that you haven't seen from Clint Capela in a while. Like, he looked old for someone who's 26 years old, I think, at this point. He's 25, 26. He looked like he was 32. Like, he looked awful. And he's looked like that, like, not to that extent, but he's looked kind of slow for this entire season. That's why Mike has been going to this PJ Tucker at center lineup for a lot of minutes. Like, by the way, have you had a problem with Mike going to that lineup a lot to start the season? I realize we didn't talk about that on the last podcast.
I see the problem is it's hard to say this with how bad Clint Capela is. A lot of people are very mad at him for going smaller and going smaller and going smaller, but like, how do you go big again if Clint Capela is just terrible?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like you want to justify Clint being on the floor, but he's not giving you any reason, right? Like, he's not giving you a reason to think that he's... And he started last season like this, too. He really... If I'm not mistaken, like, Clint and Eric started last season exactly like this. And I remember, because I remember writing about how both of those guys looked like guys who were begging to be traded. mid-season, and it feels like that this season. The problem for the Rockets is they can't trade one of those two players, right? Like, it's really, really bad. It's really rough, and whatever the hell it is, these guys have to shake it off. Like, they have to shake it off, and they have to shake it off quickly, because they need both these guys come postseason time. They're not good. They have no chance to survive against some of the teams in the Western Conference, even the bottom tier teams in the Western Conference. If Clint Capela and Eric Gordon are not Clint Capela and Eric Gordon of past, by the time the playoffs come around, the Rockets are absolutely screwed. Absolutely screwed.
Yeah. I mean, this Rockets team right now looks like the worst team in Texas. Like, legitimately looks like the worst team in Texas. And that's totally unacceptable with how much, like, talent and how much salary they have on that roster. This cannot continue. It's hard to believe, like, even what we're seeing out there, because it has in some games. Like, there's a number of games where they just look like they're not trying. They just look like they don't care and don't want to be there. And I get that it's easy to get burnt out on a long season like this. I know it happens to a lot of teams, but they can't do that. They can't go out there and just, like, half-ass it in the way that they are. And they especially can't go out there and do whatever they did tonight, whatever it was. Why they all looked like they were attempting to, like, get out of bed or, like, stave off a terminal disease or something. Whatever happened to them, this can't keep happening. This is an utter disaster and is going to get people fired and traded if they don't do something about it.
It got to the point where the Rockets would cut into the lead and they still had 30 points left to cut off. That's how bad the loss was, man. Like the game was just like they were fighting uphill the entire time. At no point did they feel like they had control of the game. And I think that's a big red flag, because even in blowouts, like, the opposing team has control of the game at some moments of the game. This was not that. They never had control of the game. There was not a lead change for the entire game.
Yeah, it is. It's a miracle that they only lost as badly as they did. Like, they didn't lose the rest of the game horrendously. Like, after the first quarter, in fact, I think they even, like, won the rest of the game by like a point or something like that. But that first quarter, just they just dug themselves into a grave, and there was no way they were going to get out of that. And like, no matter how much they tried to come back from it, that whatever was happening was still happening, even though maybe they cared some more. I don't know.
Yeah. And like, this is the kind of game where like the next game you play has to be like red alert. Like, you have to win that game. You have to win in Memphis. I don't care if it's a back-to-back. I don't care if you're traveling. I don't care about any of that. You have to win the next game.
Yeah, they need to blow Memphis out. They absolutely have to shred them.
Yeah, to get the taste out of this game out of your mouth. Because if they lose that game in Memphis, like, at that point, it doesn't even matter how many games it's been in the season. Like, you might have to raise a red flag. Like it doesn't matter if you're seven games in. Like, you might have to start trying drastic. Like, even tonight, the Rockets, they threw out, after 5 minutes, they quickly put in Daniel House and Thabo Sefolosha. And then later on, they put in Austin Rivers. And then they put in Chris Clemens. And, like, they haven't played Chris Clemens all year. Again, at the beginning of the season, I talked about how if Chris Clemens is one of your main rotation players this year, you are in a world of hurt. And right now, the Rockets are in a world of hurt if they're having to depend on Chris Clemens. Now, if you're the Rockets, do you continue on with this plan to rest Russell Westbrook on the second half of a back-to-back? Because that before the game, it did seem like Mike D'Antoni was headed in that direction.
Oh, boy. I mean, you probably should, honestly, in terms of, like, long-term, how to let him keep recovering and keep guys fresh. Because here's the deal. They need to do this for long-term and playoff goals. Now, if preparing yourself for the playoffs and long-term goals keeps you from making it into the playoffs, then it didn't matter what you did either way.
Well, I don't think the Rockets are there yet, right? Like, I don't think they don't have to worry about that quite yet. But they're definitely at the point where they need to start building good habits, right?
Yes.
And I think that's where you probably consider playing Russ. I know it's the second half of a back-to-back, and I know Russ just got knee surgery, but, like, you kind of have to think drastically after a loss like that. Like, if they had just lost this game by, like, 10 points and didn't have that kind of first quarter, like, I guess you don't really have to worry about it, right? But
it wouldn't be a bad no.
Yeah, and there's no urgency to win the next game. But this loss, this is the kind of loss that forces you to get a little desperate. Not desperate, but a little desperate. Try some new scrap some plans. And I think you at least think about playing Russ for the next game.
Well, he definitely does have a lot of energy. Was he like a minus 46 tonight somehow? Yes. I don't even know how that's possible. There's plenty of blame to spread. You can spread that nice and evenly across a lot of people right now.
That's a great topic. Let's talk about that. Who is to blame for how shaky they've been?
Everyone? Can it be everyone?
Because I'm getting a ton after every game. I tweet one quote, just one quote from Mike D'Antoni. The next seven replies my mentions are, this guy has to go. At this point, it feels like 60 to 70% of Rockets fans are in favor of firing Mike D'Antoni. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
No, I think you're right. That's my experience, too.
Yeah, like, it really does feel like the fan base is completely turned. And by the way, let me just say this. No title contender, no would-be title contender has ever benefited from firing a coach midseason other than the Cleveland Cavaliers of 2016. That's the only example you can draw upon. And I'm not even sure they played meaningfully better in the regular season after they fired David Blatt. I think they had actually a better record with David Blatt than they did after they fired him and you know, put in Ty Lue. Like,
you're saying it was to keep LeBron happy.
Right. It was the kind of move you did to keep your franchise player happy. And I just don't, like, this never works. 99.9% of the times, firing a coach midseason is bad. It never turns around your season. The Rockets learned this 3 years ago when they fired Kevin McHale midseason. It did not work.
Yeah, and then it was worse.
It was a complete storm, PR-wise. Like, it's not something you want. You don't want to fire a coach midseason. If Rockets fans are in favor of letting go of Mike, the best course of action, like, is to let his contract expire. And I don't even think letting go of Mike is the right move. Like, here's the question I always ask when people want to fire their head coach. Is there available coach on the market that you feel is a meaningful upgrade? Because I look at the market of coaches right now, I can't think of one coach that I can say is definitely better than Mike D'Antoni. Because you're talking about firing a Hall of Famer. Like, that's what Mike is. Like, Mike's going to go into the Hall of Fame one day. It's not just his influence on the game. He's just really, really damn good at this. He's won 60-plus games multiple seasons. He's won 50 games pretty much like every other year of his career. He's gotten to multiple Western Conference Finals. And I guess people will never be sold on him until he wins a title. I think that's ridiculous. Like, I think, like, you look at some of the other coaches in the NBA that haven't won a title. You're telling me Brad Stevens, Mike Boonhoser, and some of these guys aren't good coaches just because they haven't won one? Like, I think that's a ridiculous way of evaluating things.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, if not, it'd be different if, like, James Harden wanted him out, right? Like, if we started hearing about, like, oh, you know, the star players want the coach out, then we can have a different discussion. But I don't – like, I've seen the belief that, oh, well, we should basically just pull the Band-Aid off now, right? But what's it going to help? Like, what is the point of it even then, just changing this sooner? I mean, it's
– firing a coach midseason is not pulling the Band-Aid out. That's like that's pulling the Band-Aid out and stabbing that wound again.
Right, is that it's a breach of trust in a way, right, that you don't want. If you want players to – if you want the team to have, like, a coherent culture, you can't have people looking over their shoulders all the time. Like, they need to stick this out. They need to have some professionalism. They need to have some trust. Even if that trust is misplaced, it's better to, like – it's better to have shown loyalty and, like, perhaps have been wrong than to show disloyalty.
And there's the case that, like, I've seen a lot of Rockets fans make that – like, Mike's lost the locker room. That's not true. I can tell you.
I haven't heard about that at all. What we would have heard about that.
I can tell you from personal experience that's not true. All the players in that locker room still love Mike. That is not true. Like, that's patently false. Like, the idea that he's lost the locker room, that's not something that's happening right now. They're just playing bad. Like, and we're six games in, and the Rockets have plenty of time to turn this around. They were 20 games in last season, and they still didn't turn it around. Now, I'm not saying if you're 20 games in and they're so bad, you shouldn't worry. What I'm saying is, like, firing a coach midseason is never the answer.
Yeah, that's a panic move. And the team should not be panicking, absolutely. They've been given plenty of reasons to panic. It's been a rough few months for this team, but that is not the answer. Now, if we want to get into firing coaches, I also don't understand why some coaches were fired over the summer. To me, that is a bigger concern than this other stuff, but that's fine. We're talking about right now, and right now you can't fix this by getting rid of Mike D'Antoni. You can only fix this by stuff that, I don't know, make the guys play better. Yeah, give more of a
like that's the only way you can turn this around. Like, give some sort of effort defensively and hit your shots. Hit your shots.
And that seems to be why a lot of people want D'Antoni to get fired, because they believe that someone else could come in here and make these guys give a shit. But, like, no one can do that. That's not a thing that people can do. Not just like, oh, if the right guy was here, he'd do it. Like, it's just not a thing anyone can do. You're not going to you can't just bring in some guy to make a whole room full of guys change their attitude overnight. That doesn't work. If they aren't changing their attitudes now, like, that's a problem that no one's going to be able to fix. Firing Mike D'Antoni isn't going to change any of these problems that are happening right here.
And another argument I've seen is that, oh, the offense is too simplistic, and this is supposed to be Mike D'Antoni's, like, strength, and the offense is, like, the most rudimentary offense ever. And first of all, like, they're fourth in the league in offense. They were the
and they can't shoot.
And they were awesome in offense last year. They're awesome in offense the year before, and they were awesome in offense the year before that. Like, they have not changed their offense meaningfully from A to B to C. Like, it's generally the same offense. The Mike's added in some wrinkles. It's pretty much the same offense.
Yeah, like I was saying, they are fourth in the league in offense over this first six games, and that's despite them not being able to hit a three to save their lives. So the concern on that end continues to baffle me. It is entirely a defensive concern this season, and oh boy, we're going to see how that goes.
Right. So they definitely have, looking at it right now, they're definitely paper thin. They definitely need to bring in some guys. Now, right now, they don't have the luxury of bringing in guys because guys aren't really exactly available, unless they make a massive trade tomorrow. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think if they're going to make a trade, it's going to happen closer to the trade deadline. And if they make any other significant roster moves, it's going to happen on the buyout market, or they might add like a G League guy or something. But like, they're not going to make any move of note right now. I think they just have to play better, and that sounds really simple and really dumb, but it is the solution to this. Like, they have to hit their shots, they have to avoid some of the dumb defensive mistakes that they've they've allowed, like the fast break stuff is concerning, the back cut stuff is concerning. They have to fix that stuff. The point of attack stuff is really concerning. Like Eric Gordon and James Harden cannot let guys just drive past them. They have to put up some sort of resistance. And Clint Capella should not be responsible for cleaning up all of that. And Clint Capella himself has to play better. Like there are a lot of things. Like Eric Gordon has to. But there are a lot of things the Rockets can do to turn this around. Firing Mike D'Antoni is not the solution here. It's not.
By the way, you want to hear something funny? Do you know who has the highest net rating in the NBA right now?
The Phoenix Suns.
It's the Miami Heat.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. They're like 5-1 right now, and
the Suns are third. Come on now, they're not that good.
Yeah. the league is wacky right now, and that's why you shouldn't put too much weight into the first 2 weeks of the season. You should put some weight, but not the same kind of weight you put in 20 games in.
Yeah, bad teams don't know they're bad yet, and old teams haven't played in the shape yet. So you're right, we're gonna see a more realistic look at things as time goes on. Like the first month as a whole, like the first 30 days worth of games can in fact have some valuable information in them, but it takes a month until you really have anything worthwhile to look at.
Yeah, and I'm concerned that people are listening to this podcast and think that we're just making excuses for the Rockets. Again, like that is not at all what we're doing. We're just trying to understand the Rockets. Like we're trying to analyze them. We're trying to figure out what they're doing wrong. We're trying to figure out if the Rockets are indeed in as bad of a spot as some people think they are. And as of right now, I think they're in a rough spot. You know, I wouldn't say they're in a red flag kind of territory right now.
Well, as I say, no one's as bad as their worst game. And my friend, I think we saw that game.
Is it dirty yellow? Is that the color I'm thinking? It's like
like a muddy, like a yellow flag that fell in the mud.
Maybe mustardish. Maybe that's the color. Like I don't know. It's not a good yellow. It's not one of the pretty yellows. That's what I'll say.
Maybe it's like a yellow flag that like someone got injured nearby and got some blood on it or something.
Maybe
it's a bad flag. It's not red, but it's bad.
You don't want the flag. You don't want the flag that we're describing here.
Yeah, this is a flag that the ref is going to hold with like one finger and thumb, like as far away from themselves as possible, and just like flick it away.
Yeah, you want the yellow flag or you want the green flag? You don't want whatever the hell this is. You don't want that. Well, that seems like a good stopping point for the podcast. Subscribe to the Red Shoes Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at Soamali on NBA, and follow Forrest on Twitter at
Dunots, DUNOTS.
And yeah, guys, good night.
Hey guys, it's Mike. As you know, I adopted my pup Rocky from a local rescue. Now, when people asked me what kind of dog Rocky was, I was always stumped. I used an Embark dog DNA test to decode my most puzzling questions about Rocky. You can also learn about your dog's inner secrets with Embark, the highest rated dog DNA test. Unlock over 350 breeds and screen for over 200 genetic health risks. Save $50 on a breed and health kit with promo code KIT at EmbarkVet.com. Again, that's promo code KIT.